Hey friends, it's Eric Swanson, co-host of 30 Minutes in the New Testament, here with a special announcement. And that announcement is that 30 Minutes in the New Testament can now be found on YouTube. If you click on the link in the show notes here just below me, you're going to see that we have our own YouTube page. And the reason we're doing that is because from now on, we're going to be recording not just audio of the episodes, which will continue on the various podcast platforms that you use, but we're also going to film our episodes so that you can access video. And so make sure to click on that link, subscribe today so you can keep up with all the clips we release and all our future episodes. Thanks so much.
Hello and welcome to Let the Bird Fly, a podcast about living freely in a world given back to us. This is Wade here in the podcast studio, joined by my dear friend and colleague, the Reverend Dr. Michael Berg. Jason is not with us for this one. He had to go do professor things and he is teaching some classes. We're going to be talking today about liturgical time. Time is something we all think about each day. Like it or not, we set our alarm on our phone. We have to be to work or to class or to other obligations at set times. We think about our life in years and decades. We think about seasons. It's a lousy day weather-wise in Milwaukee today, but this is hopefully the end of winter, and we can think of time, mark time in that way. And what we're going to be talking about today, then, again, is liturgical time. How does the church look at time? How do the scriptures talk about time? How does God relate to time? This is maybe one of the hardest things for us to understand about God, is he's not caught up in time in the same way that we are. And so that's what we'll be talking about today. Let the Bird Fly is part of the 1517 Podcasting Network. Encourage you to go to 1517.org. Lots of resources that you can check out there, including their Academy course that they have going now and a host of other podcasts, and then written resources as well. Michael, lest we go too long with our introduction, would you mind giving us our disclaimer?
Yeah, this show's a podcast, so it'll be fine. Go live free, friends. Don't let us get in the way.
And that brings us to our main topic, which once again is time, and specifically liturgical time, having a sense of how time is treated in the church, in the scriptures, and with relation to God. I think this partly came up in a conversation I had, and looking at the Old Testament, the New Testament, how people would have reckoned or thought about time. And I think that we often minimize or fail to appreciate the richness with which time is considered in the scriptures, the imagery that's used with time, how people would have understood things with relation to time. Time's right there at the beginning of the scriptures. You have eternity. You have God in eternity. You have then days. You would think morning, evening, but there was evening. There was morning. You have a seventh day, which is supposed to be a day of rest, a time of rest. You then have these kind of ages. St. Augustine likes to break these down into set ages or seasons in the scripture. We're given times of how long God's people are in exile or times for how long they will be in the wilderness. Numbers associated with holiness, numbers associated with God, numbers associated with the with the earth. And I think one of the challenges for us as people living after the Industrial Revolution, and I won't get all Unabomber here unless you want me to, Michael, but where do you go to school, by the way?
Go Blue.
Yep. He also went to Harvard. We can blame Harvard for the bad stuff. But since the Industrial Revolution, we do live according to time in ways that are much more structured than in the past. It's why we have clocks. It's why we have watches, right? You have work hours. Many people do. We thankfully don't have to punch a time clock. It'd be pretty cool if we just got a time clock, though, to, like, put
we
in the hallway.
Get one. I bet you we could get one and, like, check in.
Yeah.
Check out.
I think that would be fun. We because of that's how things work, and then we think of, right, there's days, and then there's weekdays, and then there's weekend, and that's different time. We tend to think of time in a very linear fashion. We're very cognizant. For much of human history, if you ask someone what year in which they were born, many didn't know, and it didn't bother them. I think someone today, if they didn't know what year they were born, they would be very bothered by that. We see things in succession, and we see things in a very linear way, a very measured, linear way. But I know you with worship, Michael, and both of us when we're teaching in the scriptures, and when we teach world religions and you look at how different religions look at time or escaping from time, things like that, there's so much more there than we often get at face value. What would you say if we start maybe with the church, or should we start with the scriptures? Should we go the Lutheran approach, or?
Let me first tell you something important. Vintage time clocks.
Nice.
Pretty pricey so far in my
more than our statue we bought, the Paul Bunyan?
Yes. So there could be some more research.
Because we got away with that one. Neither of our wives, yep. I don't know that they were pleased, but they didn't discipline us.
Here's one maybe for a little bit cheaper. We'd have to buy the cards and stuff, but I think this is actually a worthy thing to research. So let's go back to time, though. Okay.
And maybe as department head, at the end of the week, you just could sign them.
Right.
Or maybe have a note like, do better.
Yep.
Oh.
Yep. Can imagine us all sitting there at like 4:59 in the hallway. I've been at jobs where you were.
Yeah. Oh, that was all my jobs, you know, back in the day, yeah.
I've punched a time clock.
And the worst was when you forgot.
Yeah.
And then you had to hope your manager would, like, write it in for you.
Right, yeah. There's different ways to think about time, and we need Dr. Keene on here or somebody. That we're not going to go down to, like...
Get into some physics, huh?
Get into some physics. But let's maybe narrow it down.
Did you ever take physics?
Yeah, in high school.
I never took it. Yeah. It seems like it's a given that kids take physics.
Yeah.
And like the other day, Ziggy had to do something for work, and he's like, yeah, it wasn't hard, it was just physics. And it just reminded me again, like, I think it's unusual that I didn't take physics.
That's unusual. Physics, chemistry, and then, you know, what we call biology or earth science.
I took botany, earth science, yeah. I think zoology, maybe. Yeah.
In high school, you should have taken physics, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I avoided it. Somehow.
Anyway, let me think about is time cyclical or is it linear? Let's basic options right there. You know, I think the Bible is very clear about there's the beginning, there's an eschaton, there's a middle. This progresses. This is a story that happens in history, and so you can't just come up and say, oh, this Western linear time. You know, right. No, this is how it works. At the same time, when we think about time from our point of view, perhaps the biggest thing is making it a commodity, right? We speak of wasting time.
Mm-hmm.
We speak of saving time as if it's a thing. And that's fine as far as it goes, but other cultures would be like, we don't even have a concept of that. Like, time's the one thing you have that is abundant. It never runs out because it keeps going and going and going.
Time
and going
is and going. Money.
Time is money. I mean, it was flat out say it. And, you know, I'm not of the idea that we should all just chill out and go on island time. You need to show up on time so we can get stuff done, right? I'm definitely
that time clock. That time.
I would like a time clock. I would like to know when people are time clocking in and clocking out.
You would have the most hours.
Yeah. And now,
well, I don't. You would probably have the most hours.
I was here before 6
today. Right, that's the thing, because you get there very early. Yeah.
Now,
I was going to say Joel might have the most
Joel's
hours.
Here, yeah. Joel puts in the longest hours. Are they always productive, my hours, at 5 in the morning?
I don't know.
You're not here to see.
I could count. I couldn't count on one hand because I used to have to do opening shift at McDonald's, but I don't often wake up at 5 in the morning. Yeah. If I'm up at 5 in the morning, something's wrong.
Something's wrong, yeah. So that's a problem for us, right? That is a problem. And connected with the commodifying of time, if that's a word, is the way we think of holidays, let's say post-World War II. And that is that we flipped things upside down. Instead of the holiday beginning the holy day beginning the celebration comes before the holiday, and by the time you get to the holiday, you're so sick of it, you don't mm-hmm. actually. And I think we lose something there. We lose the delayed gratification. We ended up losing the spirit. We end up losing the enjoyment even. So why do we celebrate Christmas before Christmas when there was 12 days of Christmas that were after Christmas? Why do we celebrate Valentine's Day before Valentine's Day and go through all of our American holidays? Well, it's very simple, is you're selling stuff.
Yeah. Or and at the same time, we feel the need then to make the holy day, the holiday, which was meant to be a day of rest. I mean, this is why some of the early Protestants is like, we got to get rid of all these feast days so people can actually work.
This idea that the medieval peasant was just working their work. They had a lot of days off.
Exactly. And but that day was then sanctified, or it was marked by the not busyness, right? And as we, this becomes consumeristic, but also we rather than sanctify that day, we make it bigger than it's meant to be.
It becomes law because you have to fit everything in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you think of time as something that is a commodity that you look over and you control, which ironically we understand that we can't control it. This is one of those modern...
Well, we're reminded sometimes we can't control it. Yeah.
This is one of those quintessential... By the way, I just remember the last episode, what I forgot.
Go ahead, say it for people. This will come out after.
I'm going to come out later. This is one of these beautiful things, very... ironic, hard-hitting question about modernity. In modernity, we're looking over everything. We're looking over language. We control it. We're looking over nature. We control it. We're looking over all of these kinds of things. And we dared to look over time and make it a commodity. So we speak of time as money, wasting time, saving time, all of these kinds of things. But we understand that time slips through and we cannot control it. It's one of those mystical type questions. We thought we could control it, but we couldn't. There's something beyond our ability, right? That time is uncontrollable for us as much as we try to do it.
It marches on.
So, you know, Father Time is always going to win, right? Even Tom Brady has to retire. Yeah. So that...
I wonder if Father Time, is he supposed to be like married to Mother Nature, or is that...
I think those are two separate things.
Two separate things?
So that...
I wonder though... They should think about maybe dating.
Well, those would be great cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a great sitcom.
They have shared interests. They're governed things.
This would be a great premise for a sitcom. Mm-hmm. 1990s.
Oh, yeah, sitcom. Laugh track sitcom.
Yeah, 80s, 90s sitcom. Not anymore. By the way, in Netflix, you know what we've been watching? Martin.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Set in Detroit.
Set in Detroit. Hilarious.
Yeah. Or is it set? I know he's from Detroit. I thought it was set in Detroit too.
Yeah,
but
it okay. is. Not for, you know.
So it held up okay, huh?
Only three episodes in, and it would not air today, but I think it holds up okay enough.
Okay.
Enough. Okay enough.
Yeah. Nice.
So thinking of time as a commodity, then our holy days become commodities as well. They're not days of rest.
Right.
There's pressure now, right? So that way of thinking about time does fight against the time we see in the Bible, but also the time in liturgical time, so to speak, in the time of the church. So the one issue is flipping it, right? So Advent is no longer a anticipation, repentant anticipation of Christ's first and second arrivals, but it becomes a celebration of the Christmas until there. Lent still tries to hold on to that, right? We still have that. Now, what's a bigger question, or I think a way to put this question in a deeper way, but also more practical, is for you to take what James K. A. Smith calls a liturgical audit. You take a look at, you audit your life. And one way to do that, these are deeper questions. Who is your God? What do you worship? These are, you know, these are David Foster Wallace type questions. When you do that with worship, you can do that in many number of ways. What's your sacred spaces? Where are your sacred texts? What are your hero? What, all these things. One simple way to start that is look at your calendars. So think about how many competing calendars we have. We have a liturgical calendar. We have a school calendar where the new year is in August and the end of time is in May. We have a
tax schedule, tax financial, schedule. You know.
There's an economic calendar where you have Black Friday, taxes.
Football season.
You have Mattress Day, President's Day, where you're going to sell mattresses.
What's the Toyota-thon?
Toyota-thon. You have a very strong economic calendar. You have a feeling of the calendar of our United States. Every month has a feel to it. December is Christmas, Thanksgiving. In November, February is Valentine's Day, March is St. Patrick's Day, even if you're not Irish or Catholic. There's a feel to these things. There's a sports calendar. We're got over opening day, so now we are into NFL draft territory. Mm-hmm. There is a calendar for just about everything, and they compete. And when you throw out saints' days, when you throw out the holy days or the holidays, something's going to fill that vacuum. There is a patriotic calendar, right? July 4th and Veterans and Memorial Day, those kinds of things. And when you look at the calendar of, let's say, Tsarist Russia versus Communist Russia, when you take a look at the calendar of 1980 America as opposed to 1520 Italy, you can see what the powers to be think are important for the society.
Right. Yep.
This is a patriotic holiday, or this is in bank holiday rather than a spiritual holiday. And those two compete and you lose something. Now we're not saying
I might be saying
you may be saying
be careful saying I'm not saying.
I would venture to guess that we're on the same page.
I'm
here.
I'm inclined to not say it.
That we are not trying to say get rid of the Easter Bunny and Santa and everything will be fine. What we are saying is be aware that you follow different calendars and that you lose something when maybe you only see things through the sports calendar, the economic calendar, the political calendar.
I say that too then. Okay, yeah, yes. Yeah.
So how can you fight against this without being a Scrooge, like in December or whatever? I think there's many ways that you can do this without being traditional for the sake of traditional, but being aware enough to know that you miss something. One thing is gratification, delayed gratification at the holiday, right? So there's always, not always, it's kind of a silly one when people get all worked up about, we should sing Hallelujah in Lent. Well, think about what we're doing here when we, at this time, we delay the gratification.
Mm-hmm.
This is being fully human, that our world cannot always be the fake hallelujah. This is very human. It's very theological. It's formative. There are so many things liturgical can help you navigate these things. And just to throw it away in a very Protestant, pietistic way of that calendar doesn't matter. No, you don't. You are not so spiritual that you get to put yourself above space, above art, above music, above language, and above a calendar. You don't. You are created as a physical being. Your God took on flesh and entered not just space, but time. And that means that we should embrace this concept of a calendar, embrace this liturgical space and art and symbolism, because quite frankly, God made it this way, and it's good, and God came into it to redeem it.
And I think that's the something that when I think is helpful when Lutherans are living within the liturgical year. And people will ask me, what do I miss about the parish? This is one of the main things I miss about the parish is my daily life was much more defined by the liturgical year than it is. And don't get me wrong, we have the paraments change colors in chapel, and right, I'm cognizant of what day it was when I preached today. But I was not living that I'm living the school calendar for the most part now, and I've lost something.
A lot, you do.
Yeah, and if we think of kind of the two extremes, so you get kind of American non-denominational Protestantism that sometimes you even hear this church isn't having Christmas Day service so you can be with family, right? And a real skepticism of having too many of these big days. And then the opposite, where you can have the Roman Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church, which there's a every day is a minor festival, right? You can have all of these
multiple saints every day.
And Luther's early, in like his early instinct was to get rid of a fair amount of these days as like festival days that you're going to not work, but never to get rid of all of them. And in fact, if you look at some of the days that the early Lutherans retained, it's really interesting to kind of study. But I agree with you what you're saying. If the impulse to just get rid of all of them is to disembody us and to miss that God came into time, he works in time, he works in a sacramental way. It's to forget the great cloud of witnesses who have gone before us. On the flip side, if the abundance of days distracts us from what makes all days meaningful, namely Christ and his incarnational
work. Your regular vocations, yeah.
Right. That, you know, I remember years ago, you saying, and this struck with me, is, you know, that our church calendars are way too full. You know, you have your parish calendar and all these activities, and we draw people out of their vocation so they can be at 18 different meetings at church or movie night or whatever else. And it's not to say you can't have that, but that can be like a Protestant busyness that's, we feel the need, we have to be filling time or we're not doing our job, right? We have to have all those things. And so there is a sweet spot there to recognize that time is a gift of God. Time is sanctified by word and sacrament. God has come into time. And so balancing vocational stuff, but also with, there are times that you just need to stop and focus. And many American Protestants have never known liturgical time, ecclesiastical time. And I think that has deprived them. Yeah. Of an important aspect of the fullness of Christianity, or you'll get weird things. And I don't want to get hate mail, but I've said it a number of times. I really hate New Year's Eve services, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, because it's not the church's New Year. Right. The church's New Year is the beginning of Advent. And now this is a great, I like being with my family on that day. And then I like being with my family in church on Christmas, right? But we can kind of, right, we mix these things up.
Or that you wouldn't celebrate the Epiphany on January 6th, but you insist on January 1st and December 31st too. Yeah. Silly.
So, but what happens when we, sometimes in that, when we kind of meld all these calendars, is, well, what is the New Year's Eve or New Year's Day service become about? Well, now we've gone from 2023 to 2024. And it's just the linear march of time. Now that's behind us. New things, and we end up talking about things being new, not in a resurrection way, but in like a fresh start.
Yep.
Well, Well, what does the church year do? The church year doesn't say now we went from 2023 to 2024. It says we're back at Advent, mm-hmm. right? We're going through it all again. We're going through the life of Christ and the life of church all again.
It's a commemoration of things.
Yeah. And in a participation in it, as yeah. right, it's delivered to us in the preached word and in the sacraments. And so I do think that flattening of time can be a really unhelpful thing. There was, you know, issues of we always want to measure things or, you know, that sometimes that the notion of the right time, the proper time, you know, we can speak of propers in the church here. I think that's not just a liturgical thing, but part of what the church here helps us to do is to have a proper sense of time. And if we maybe transition a bit to how Scripture talks about time, this is how Scripture most often talks about time. It's the right time. The right time for this. It's when Christ came in the fullness of time, when the time had fully come. You know, these seasons. In Judges, you can even see, right, the cycles of things that we're going through, and the best judges do the right thing at the right time. The creation account, right? All the things are created or made at the right time. The notion of, right, that the Sabbath is the end of a week, and then the eighth day, Sunday, is the beginning of a new week, and that's something that from creation is attached to God speaking to his people and God's action with his people, which is why Sunday is so important. He rises on a Sunday, and this becomes the Lord's day, and I'm not like a Sabbatarian or anything.
But it's a new kingdom, the elusive eighth day of the Sabbath rest.
Right, eternally. And to be rooted in that, even in our week, that it's not just, well, this is weekend. And this is why, right, some you go to Europe and some places still, there's not a lot of places open on Sunday. It's not because they're more Christian than us, but it's because it's they get that there was, even if they don't get the religious underpinning of it, there was something of value, right? There's proper times. And I don't know, I think it's really hard for us to have a sense for that. We want to break everything up. You know, it came up talking with someone about, well, Christ is supposed to be in the tomb 3 days, three nights. This is what, you know, is said to Jonah. How is it 3 days? And then, you know, you talk about, well, there's the Sabbath and, right, sun up, sundown, whatever. And then, of course, the Jews reckoned a part of a day as a day. You know, but we look and there's the hand on the clock and it's going around and we say, well, it was only this many hours of a day. And what we in trying to mark time, we lose time. And I think there's a service that the scriptures and the church do to us in calling us, it's almost like it calls us out of time into time, if that makes sense. That this is...
the already but the not yet is
yeah. related to this. And maybe we want to hit on the scriptures or even just hit a little bit on God. Something, the older I get that I didn't think much about, and it just boggles my mind more and more the older I get. Like, that God doesn't exist in time. He knows all things, and all things are as good as done in him, then. We're in that, right? Why is God taking so long? Well, what does Peter say? Well, him a day is like 1,000 years, and he is being merciful. And so, you know, in what is time rooted as well, I would say the biblical view is time is rooted. We talked about Christianity and paganism and a God who speaks. Well, time is rooted in God's conversation, his saving conversation with the human race.
And certainly we are in time and we are stuck with linear time, and Christ comes into time, and so this is part of the greatest miracle
of all time. He observed
the
Sabbath.
Right, that the infinite would be finite. That part of that is he has a begin, you know, he has to deal with the third right. watch of the night too, you know, just like everybody else, right? So, but it's kind of interesting when you think about time being related to space, and do we really have a real grasp on this? Well, you can see that we live in linear time, and it's real, and it's in a way Christological because Christ came into it. But you can also see there is an existence beyond or outside or however you want to say it, of time because of God's infinity, right? And so both can be true, even if we can't fully understand it, right? And so all things are going to make sense in God, right? And someday we will, as we keep saying, we'll know as we are fully known. So, you know,
is that a garbage?
That is the garbage is being picked up outside of our window. So this is good.
Either that or it's the end of days.
I think it's just the garbage.
Okay, I'm gonna hope so. I got some stuff to repent of still.
Some garbage to throw
I have it
away,
on my calendar. Yeah.
Just spiritually throw
yeah,
away.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So
the problem is I often end up recycling it.
But do you have a rim shot on that yet?
Oh, I do. It's gonna be a delayed rim shot. I'm gonna go over here. Oh, boom, boom. Go back here. There we go.
Yep, very good. All right. So the concept of time and Christ becoming in time means that we have to deal with time. You can't run away from it. And that means you shouldn't run away from the liturgical time and the liturgical candle. You can try to run away from it, but we're going to catch up to you radical reformers, right?
Right.
You can try to preach.
And we, to be fair, we might run away from it. I run away from it sometimes, not necessarily theologically that I reject the notion, but I become absorbed, and I lose that calendar.
So you can try to preach Pentecost on December 25th, but eventually probably you're gonna eventually celebrate Christmas, right? And so I think that the way to think about art, architecture, symbolism, time, music, all of these things, is to not run away in some pietistic, I'm above this, in a spiritual way, above the physical, but to embrace it, knowing that it's a gift, and it is for the gospel, and so embrace the calendar. Now, how do you do that? How do you do that? Well, I think you can subtly make Advent. You know, maybe in your church or in your home, the Christmas tree is a little bit bare until Christmas, or it's silver and blue or purple, whatever liturgical color your church follows. And then Christmas is different. You can do things like this. You can veil Christ during Lent, and then you can put the flowers away, and they come back on Easter. You can manage these things. You can change the pyramid colors. I would suggest too that in the parish, not that you're going to have church for every Saint's Day, but that you put that in front of your people and to stop and think about these stories. It breaks up the monotony, especially of the Pentecost.
And to the credit of our CM, the Congregational or Campus Ministry here, the last couple of years we've been doing more of the minor festivals. And I will say that's been some of the better sermons of the year when people are given those days.
And this will probably come after this, but April 6th is Lutheran Artist Day. There's ones beyond just St. Patrick's and St. Valentine. There are ones that are... there's a lot of biblical ones, like there's a day for Sarah, there's a day for Abraham. What a good time to think about that. Yep. The Annunciation of Our Lord, 9 months before December 25th, that gets you to think of stuff. The presentation of the Augsburg Confession. You put things in, and you become deeper. You think of historical things. You think of biblical things. You think of symbolic things. These are fresh, new ways to, in a lot of diversity and variety, teach the Christian faith as a robust world, that as the robust worldview it is. So I think embracing it instead of turning up your nose at this, I think is the best path forward. And then you're able to mitigate a little bit of the other calendars competing against the church. You're not going to win. And it's not a competition. You're not going to win. Your kid's softball is going to be your kid's softball schedule, you know? And maybe sometimes you're like, we can't go to that tournament because it's Easter and we're going to be at home, you know? But I'm not saying you have to, you know, be the jerk that, you know, is going to not do any
tournaments. You can go to Monday Night Church if you have to.
You know, like there is a way to navigate this where you can teach yourself and to your children. We don't shun these physical things, but there are things that are more important.
Yep.
And you can do that with a calendar. You can do that with art and symbolism. And so I think we need to embrace it.
And every group is going to have a sense of shared history. Even like the futurists who think the past is bunk have a shared history. They think history is the worst, right? I mean, we're going to progress beyond it. If you're a fan of a sports team, you have a history. I'm sure Michael could rattle off World Series years for the Cardinals.
It would take a while.
I could, yeah. It would take me less time, but there would still be years to rattle off for the Tigers. Families have shared histories. There's a reason people do genealogy. They want to know about their past. Corporations are going to commemorate their past and their founders and their transformational leaders. Nations, right? And you. So I was in Pennsylvania last October, and we go to Philadelphia. Right? You want to feel a connection to what the founding fathers did there. And the church has that too. But I would say the church has it in a more meaningful way. I mentioned earlier, but again, we have in our creed, right, the communion of saints, that we are part of a church that is not, ought not be compartmentalized chronologically. I may not see St. Augustine in the pew with me on Sunday, but I'm worshiping with him and countless people whose names I will never know in this life, whose faces I've never seen. And, you know, this showed itself in the Middle Ages in part with the desire to have contact with Christian relics. Now, some of that is associated with, there's like superstition that's involved. But there is something to remembering. There's an importance to remembering that we are in one the same church with Abraham, with Moses, with Martin Luther. I don't know who else I should pick.
Great Grandma Gertrude.
Yeah, and in the Holy Communion, when we're celebrating the divine service, this is confessed often when we think of the churches. You think of the Christians on the other side of the rail. Right, this is the family meal. We're reminded of the chronological unity of the church. And I think a lot of times when people then get obsessed with time, and you know, you see this with dates of things in the church calendar, like what if Christ wasn't born on December 25th? Well, so what? We know he was born, it's a historical fact, and you know what his birth deserves? It deserves some time. Right, some time for reflection, and but when we get lost, well, what's the exact date or whatever? We're missing out on something. We're making these things simply data, and we're missing the thing they're supposed to mark. If that makes sense, and we've been talking a lot about modernism or other things. I think with the last few episodes. But I think what most Christians need is not more flattening of time, but more ability to get lost in it, to be immersed in it. And I would argue that liturgical time, the church's time, how the scriptures approach time, is really unique and in both. You mentioned linear and cyclical, and my mind goes right to world religions, right? And we talk about Eastern and Western and all this. That the church and the scriptures, they get both, mm-hmm. right? And can embrace both, and so has a corrective for anyone who wants to get lost in merely one or the other. And so to the West, maybe often it's saying slow down. Mm-hmm. To the East, maybe sometimes it's saying speed up.
Yeah, do some stuff.
Yeah. But I'll give you any closing thoughts.
No, can I share what this, if you were...
Are you going to say the Cardinals ears?
No.
Oh, okay.
If you are a listener to the podcast and listen to the last podcast, I've lost an idea, and now I have it. And the idea was for a show, or an episode, and that would be comedy is going to save us. And the idea there is comedy saves us, has an idea of free speech, right? Comedy may be the one thing that fights for free speech in our current context. Not taking ourselves too seriously, right? It has a way of speaking truth to power. It has a way to cut us down a notch a little bit. And... And the reason I thought about that last time was because we were talking about useful myths and stuff like that. And there are, instead of just everything, and this is sort of relates to our discussion here about time, everything being just so black and white, here we go, this modern way of thinking scientifically about everything. And I continue with this idea of looking over everything as if we are above it, and we get to, everything else is static, and we get to put our power onto it. To say that there's something that goes out, symbolism, art, and included in that is comedy. So I think we should do an episode on how comedy will save us.
I would write it on the board if I knew where the marker was.
We'll get it. And it is tangentially related to the paganism episode, but also this episode about time. There are things beyond, the things that make us cry, that make us smile, that make us laugh. And they it's a different dimension, and then we are three-dimensional, as you say, rather than flat. Yeah.
And I think if you think, and I think comedy does this too, but what does Christ say about the world, right? We're in the world, but not of the world. I think that applies with time too. We're in our time, but not of our time. Or at least that's what we're called to be as Christians. And I think sometimes what comedy does is it pokes fun at our time, right? And maybe reveals where we're a little bit too much of our time rather than in our time.
And comedy can be bad. Comedy can be only shock. And that's probably not great.
But well, I was going to say that's kind of like...
It is, but you got to have more
where would
than
you
shock.
Put, where you would you put Martin shock. On that spectrum?
There's some contour there.
Okay.
There's some contour there.
I'll have to go watch a few. All right, well, we're right at 40, so we're doing this new improved Excellent. Let the bird fly perfectly. And so with that, I don't know what your calendar looks like today. I don't know what you have going on. I don't know how busy you are, but I hope at some point you get a chance to step out of time so you can step into time and remember the one who came in time to die and then rise and is indeed risen so we can let the bird fly.
Goes down, get with my party and I begin to cry. I don't care what the people are thinking, I'm not drunk, I'm just a drinker. I set them up, another round, I set them up, another round, I set them up, another round, one more round won't get me down.